from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up our podcast there. Absolutely free. We want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. And they are providing the show for you each and every week, as is Conquest Scents out of Davison, Michigan, makers of the fine scents in a stick like VS1 and Evercalm. And of course, they have some other great products as well. The Scrape Maker, just one of them, and United Deer Farmers of Michigan helping us out as well, getting ready. I mean, we're like, you know, about middle of August, heading into September when things really start to ramp up. But right now, what's ramping up has been the heat, and we're going to check in with Lance Valentine from Teaching Fishing to find out how that has been on the bay, because hot, flat, sunshiny days are not exactly conducive to walleye, but this guy is the walleye whisperer. I owed you that one.
What do you mean hot, flat, calm days aren't conducive to good walleye fishing? What have you been reading?
Well, you know what? I'm just going what everybody else says. But this
everybody else is wrong.
Right. Misery loves company, Lance. You taught me that.
Oh my gosh. So do we have to go back and do a refresher course? Obviously, we have to go back and do some teaching fishing. So remember, let's back up a little bit, right? You can't catch walleyes unless you're fishing where the food is, right?
Right.
So one of the most numerous food source in Saginaw Bay specifically, the Great Lakes in general, are shiners and shad. And both shiners and shad, their food is plankton. So as we get hot, flat, calm days and the sun shines, as the day goes on and it gets warmer and hotter, all the plankton comes to the surface and gets in these great big giant mats of plankton. Well, that's where all the bait fish go, up to the top to feed on their food. And guess where the walleyes come? The walleyes come up to the top of the surface and they start feeding on that plankton. So the hotter, flatter, calmer it is, sometimes the walleye fishing is much better in open water than it is when the wind is blowing and the clouds are out and the fish don't get a chance to get grouped together because the plankton is blown all over. So what happened was, in the old days, people, and still actually to this day, but people would fish shallow for fish, or what happens a lot these days, because again, people are using the wrong theory for most of their walleye fishing, is guys fish bottom bouncers on the bottom because you got to go slow with worms because that's where walleyes live. Well, that's great if there's walleyes on the bottom, but these guys are still fishing with bottom bouncers on the bottom. The sun gets up, it gets flat, it gets calm, it gets bright, sunny. They don't catch anything. They say the walleyes aren't biting. Meanwhile, one of our guys that's listened to Teaching Fishing for a couple of years is going by and going 3.5 miles an hour, pulling crankbait 6 feet down over 30 feet of water, and they can't keep rods in the water. So the weather conditions create a movement of the bottom of the food chain, which creates a movement of the bait fish for game fish, which then creates a action that responds to that by the game fish. So flat, hot, calm, sunny days are great if you're fishing open water and the place that you're fishing has shad or shiners in it, because they will come to the surface and feed on that plankton. The game fish will come to the surface right in the middle of the day. You can fish very, very fast, get some aggressive bites, trigger these fish to bite by fast speeds and bright colors, and catch a lot more fish on those days than you can going really slow on the bottom. There you go. There's your lesson for today.
Lance Valentine, Teaching Fishing, joining us right now. And you know what? Sometimes I got to throw that out there just to see what happens, because I think I've been a fairly good student. But, you know, there are times you need that refresher course. You need to bring it back a little bit. And it's never the same thing we talk about twice. You're going to be on every week. It's never the same thing, because it's never the same thing twice every time you hit the water. Now, I want to talk about those bait fish, because, you know, you can mark fish with your Lowrance or whatever you're using. I think you're the Lowrance guy. I'm pretty sure of that. But how is it to mark the bait fish and sometimes those clouds of, you know, of like bait balls or whatever that they're looking for?
So that's important, right? But it's not just important to mark bait. It's important to find bait that is, we call it positioned correctly, that tells you they're being fed on, right? So we want to find not just bait fish, but bait fish that are positioned and grouped in a way that says they're being attacked. So if you're going along and you're trolling along for a mile and you just see bait fish underneath the boat for a whole mile and they're just kind of spread out, those bait fish are not being attacked. Because when bait fish get attacked, they do two things. They come really close together and try to make a ball, make a group, and they either go right tight to the surface, right tight against the bottom, or tight against vertical structure. That gives them a little bit of security. So if you see bait just spread out all over, it's probably not a good place to fish because those bait fish are not being attacked. When you start to see these bait balls, especially as the bait balls get closer to the surface or closer to the bottom because they're being pushed by game fish, that is a signal that there are game fish in the area and they're about ready to start feeding because the bait fish are scared. So finding bait fish is okay. Finding bait fish that are grouped and positioned in a way that says they're being attacked is much more effective for your fishing than just finding bait.
Lance Valentine joining us here on Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. And Lance, you know, I've seen the lures they call bait ball. Looks like five or six minnows grouped up on one lure. You know, I mean, look, when I'm thinking bait ball, I'm thinking maybe a few thousand bait fish and not like five.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea of that is to create that kind of herd mentality. And usually when you see that, most of the lures that actually get it right, they usually end up with a straggler. So you have four or five fish together, and then you'll have a bait maybe 2 or 3 feet behind it. And the idea of that is, hey, here's a school of bait, and here's this one bait fish that is off by itself, right, and is a lot easier to attack. Because we all know, even as hunters, we all know, right, if there's a bunch of something together, there's one off by itself, it's a lot easier for that one to be preyed upon either by humans or by other animals. It's a lot easier to get that one single than it is to get the group, right? So a lot of the things that you see, there's multiple bait fish, which will almost always have a straggler 6, 8, 10, 12 inches behind it, looking like it's a lone bait fish, right? And there's a lot of things you can do with our bait spread and our lure spread and do all that stuff to make it look that way. But that we call it a tail gunner, kind of that bait fish all by itself, is much easier to attack than the one that's actually in a group. So that's kind of the theory of that idea.
Yeah, you know, like I said, they make them for other species of fish like bass and whatnot that I've seen. And, you know, it's not something that I could see, you know, being trolling behind the pontoon or whatever. It was just one of those things that begged to be asked when you got somebody that's relatively new to this going out and looking. And what we're going to talk about here in the next segment, just to prepare you like you really need it, is to, you know, what we're going to start looking for as the days get shorter. We're going to get some cooler temperatures, and they got to put the feed bag on. So I know that's a great time. Fall is a great time, and I know October is a beautiful time for you to be out. But I didn't want to just throw, you know, the next question out there and go up against a break, which we're about to do here momentarily. So,
all right.
So hang on. We've got lots of things going on with Lance Valentine. Got a lot of things coming up. It's going to be a great time, man. We're getting through the dog days of summer, which are really not dog days, according to Lance Valentine. If you're listening to the show or you've been paying attention to Teaching Fishing, you can find him on the Facebook and online as well. And there's a link to Lance on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We've got so much more coming your way today. Just to preview what we have, there was a new state record king salmon caught by a young first-timer this year, and we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about all kinds of other great stuff coming up in a little bit. So keep it here. We got that to talk about. We're going to talk with David A. Rose. We're going to talk with Mark Sack, and we are going to direct you to the podcast as well, which is wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcast there absolutely free, courtesy of our friends at Not Just Guns, also Conquest Sense and United Deer Farmers of Michigan, here on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host for almost so close to 15 years. And if I didn't do it already, I'm going to do it again, just in case. Nathan Vandenberg, our new producer of the show, welcoming him and saying a big thank you to our good friend Alex Clark for the several many years of service of award-winning, literally award-winning radio with Alex. And we're looking forward to working with Nathan here. It'd be a great time. He's been around the radio station for a long time, so it's a natural fit for him to just come in here and take over for Alex. Alex is going into the family business of farming, which is not only admirable, but a great thing to do, man. So, but I'm sure Alex will pop in from time to time. But in the meantime, welcome, would you please, Nathan Vandenberg. And welcome back, Lance Valentine from Teachin' Fishin', who we have here on the line right now. And Lance, I want to ask real quickly, you know, we need to, when the season kind of flips over, when the new stuff starts hitting the shelf, get it while it's there. Because with the pandemic of, you know, the start of it last year, what we're going into now, supply and demand is very limited. The supply is, the demand is very great, and it seems that prices are really kind of going through the roof on everything.
It is. You know, we've talked a little bit about the fishing world, right? That, you know, I told you back not too long ago that there's something you want in the next 18 months in the fishing world, be it rods, reels, something for your boat, and you can find it. It's only going to get worse. I know there are a lot of folks at ICAST that didn't have full displays. I mean, I'm talking major companies that didn't have full displays of their whole product line because they couldn't even get one for, you know, the biggest show in the fishing industry. So if you guys are looking, need something, get it now. And I'm going to swing this on you. I'm going to segue for you, my friend. So the whole supply and demand thing, we talked before the break here about this transition from summer to fall for walleye, and it absolutely 100% becomes a supply and demand thing. So remember, right now in Michigan, the Great Lakes region, most of the bait fish that our fish eat are all hatched in the spring. They're done. We're not going to get any more, right? We're not going to get any more until we get a fall hatch of some certain bait fish, but most of our walleye fishing is based on springtime bait fish that hatch. That's what they eat 99% of the time. None of that has hatched. And, you know, we haven't had a hatch in the last 6-8 weeks, depending on, you know, where you are. So now what's happening is now we have walleyes in the system. As this water starts to get cold, we're starting to get cool nights, right? You're starting to see these nights get a little bit cooler. The skies are clear and a little cooler at night, which means we're scrubbing water temperature. It's really unnoticeable to most of us, but it's definitely noticeable to the fish that actually live in it. So we're getting these cooler nights. We're obviously getting shorter days, less daylight. So what's happening is the water is not warming as much during the day, and it's starting to scrub a little bit at night. These fish, even though it's August to us, and we're like, oh my gosh, it's hot, these fish are starting to feel that transition from summer into fall, which means they're starting to get signals that say you've got to get ready to get through a hard winter and get through the rigors of spawning if you're a spring spawner like walleyes are. So we've got to start to feed up and get ready and have enough fat stores to get through that process. So what's happening is these fish are starting to get this signal, I need to eat more, need to eat more, need to eat more, and every piece of bait that they eat is not going to be replaced till next spring. So we're getting that whole supply and demand thing. I've got lots of walleyes who have a big demand for lots of bait, and every day the supply gets less and less and less and less and less. So you're going to start to see movements away from places that are marginal areas, and you're going to start to see movements of walleyes toward places that have not only a lot of bait fish, but have multiple choices. So you're going to start to see a slow sneak of these fish from shallow water out to a little bit deeper to the first break. So now they can go shallow and access perch in the weeds in 7 feet of water, or they can go out to 15 feet of water and they can eat shad and shiner suspended in the middle of the water column. So what we're going to see is where fish traditionally during the summer are on big flats, areas where the water depth is the same for a lot of areas. Because once I find something I like, I want a lot of it. You're going to start to see a slow transition right now of these fish towards steeper drop-offs, so I can be at multiple depths a lot easier and a lot faster as we start to get closer out of summer into what we call late summer, and then into early fall as we start to kind of process that change from summer into fall. You're going to see this transition from flat as these fish move closer, not just to drop-offs, but towards steep drop-offs, so they can access different depths of water and different bait fish options very, very easily without having to swim long distance.
Lance Valentine, our guest here on Wild Michigan, being brought to you by our friends, the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. Lance, size of bait changes as well, because this is that time where they're getting ready for the winter. Things are going to slow down for them as far as feeding and activity, but they're going to have to last that amount of time underwater as well in colder water temperatures, and they're going to have to put that, you know, those big layers of fat on, and that's where the bait sizes start to get bigger as well.
Right. So, you know, it's a lot easier for a fish to eat five big shad than it is to eat, you know, 75, you know, 1.5 inch perch, right? So as we get a little colder, we're still kind of in that area where fish are eating. Wherever they are, they're going to kind of stay there. And a lot of our fish in shallow water now are eating, you know, small young of the year perch. We're seeing a lot of 1-2 inch bait get thrown up in our live well. So we're changing our bait sizes as we fish shallower, but we're starting to see the fish are out in deeper water, if they're on the bottom or even suspended. We're starting to see them starting to throw up some 4, 5, 6 inch bait fish. So as these fish that are shallow transition out to open water, you're definitely going to see a transition to larger bait, because it is more efficient, right? I only have so much energy, and if I have to expend 100 calories to eat and I only take in 100 calories, that's a net, you know, net zero. I need to stock up, so I need to expend 100 calories and take in 1,000 calories, and that's a lot easier to do with 4 or 5 big bait fish than it is to have to eat 500 small perch. So there definitely is a transition to what the fish are eating. You should start to see a transition. You should start to make a transition to bigger lures as we go into fall. As we get, you know, further into fall, your lures need to become bigger, 4 inches, 5 inches, 6 inches. As we get into actual fall time, 7, 8, 9 inch baits. I fish a lot of small musky baits in the fall for walleye. So we have to pay attention to what's going on. Most guys don't pay enough attention to the bait fish when they start making fishing decisions. What kind of bait fish live in my lake? Where are they going to be? Where are they going to move based on today's weather? And how big are they going to be? That's a huge part of putting the fishing puzzle together.
Well, hopefully we'll make those pieces fit, man. And thanks to your help, it'll be a little easier to do. And lots of things going on. And dude, as always, I appreciate your time here on the show, because the summer heating up a little bit for us, but things are going to start cooling down temperature wise for the walleye. The bigger bites are going to start happening. And real quickly, I wish you could have seen our good friend Norm Smith's face. And I always mention Norm on the show. He's a great guy. But when I said that Lance isn't using crawling crawler harnesses anymore, I thought his jaw was going to hit the floor. It's like you kicked his dog or something. Way to go, Lance.
Hey, real quick, have everybody listen, check out the Teaching Fishing YouTube page. We've got a bunch of videos that cover the transition from summer to fall, and we have a seminar called Bait Fish that walks through all the bait fish options and when you can take advantage of them for walleye. Teaching Fishing page on YouTube, lots of great videos there.
All right, check him out. It's Lance Valentine on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Make sure you check us out online at wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up our podcast there. You can listen to us anywhere you go, but we are very thankful for all of our great affiliates on the Michigan Talk Network. Also thankful for our sponsors, our friends at Conquest Sense, also Not Just Guns, and the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, and our buddy Lance Valentine, who kicked off the show, welcoming our new producer, Nathan Vandenberg, with us. Going to bring bring back a guest who it's been a little while since he's been on, but it's a very important time to have him on, not only for him, but for us, for everybody involved in this great country. I'm talking about retired Port Authority Police Officer Will Gimeno. Will, welcome back to the show, man. It's been a little while, but unfortunately, thanks to Facebook, I've been able to stalk you and can talk with you over the past couple of years. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks, buddy, and thanks for having me back on your show. I really appreciate it.
No, absolutely, man. This has been, it's been so cool because you share so much of yourself on a daily basis, and you know, even when things are a little tough, you still bring the best message, man, the positivity that comes out of you just being you every day is very infectious, and I'm very happy to have met you when I did a couple of years ago at the ATA show, getting to know you through Facebook and having you on the show. Real quickly, I want to preface this whole, what we're about to talk about, with the reason we came together was because of September 11th, 2001, the day that we as a nation were attacked, as a people were attacked. You were there, front line, foremost, and literally in the thick of things. And I'll let you give a better explanation of what went on that day for you.
Well, you know, thank you again for having me on the show, and to all the listeners for listening to me. You know, I'm a retired Port Authority Police officer with the Port Authority Police of New York and New Jersey. And we have all the major transportation facilities in New York and New Jersey, the three major airports, the bridges, the tunnels, the World Trade Center, the bus terminal where I worked at, and the PATH station. But on 9/11, you know, it was a beautiful day, as history will tell people. We were attacked. 20 of us from the bus terminal responded down to the World Trade Center, which is owned and operated by the Port Authority Police, and we have a command there. So we were going down there to help our brothers and sisters evacuate people. My sergeant, John McLaughlin, had asked for volunteers. Myself, Dominic Pizzullo, and Antonio Rodriguez volunteered. We had just graduated January 19th of 2001 at the World Trade Center at the Marriott. And we went into the buildings. We hooked up with another officer, Christopher Amoroso. There's a famous picture of him in the Daily News. You'll see him saving people. He's got some Nike gloves on. We hooked up, became a team of five, and we were leaving Tower 2 where we were getting some more equipment, not knowing that when we had left the bus terminal down to the World Trade Center, a second plane had hit. We were in the impression only one plane had hit and hit Tower 1. So we were working our way back to Tower 1, and unfortunately, that's when we heard a humongous boom, and Tower 2 came down on us. And at that point, it took the lives of Antonio Rodriguez and Christopher Amoroso, left myself, my sergeant, and Dominic Pizzullo buried alive, and became a fight for our lives. After a while, you know, I found myself literally buried in a cocoon of concrete and a lot of pain. Dominic was kind of impacted in debris. My sergeant was on the other side of this concrete wall. There was a little hole above me about 30 feet up that was letting light in. And after a while, Dominic could shimmy out and literally crawl over my face because there wasn't much room and there was a small, small void. He tried to get me out, and after 15, 20 minutes, the Tower 1 came down and made me and put me in a lot more pain. Sergeant Blockham was now being crushed as I was. And unfortunately, when that tower came down, it took my friend's life, Dominic. But in his last moments, he pulled out his sidearm and he fired a round up into that hole in a last ditch effort to let somebody know that his team was down there. And that was difficult. And then, you know, as the day progressed, it got worse. I had fireballs falling in, starting to burn my arm, and those somehow, some way put themselves out. And then Dominic's weapon, which was out, I guess, got heated up from the fireballs and began to fire. And next thing you know, I took 15 rounds above my head. It took me a second to kind of figure out what it was, but I survived that. And as the evening continued, we kept fighting for our lives, and it became difficult, very difficult. You know, at one point, I wanted to die. And I tell people, you know, when you think you can't anymore, you know, I talk about faith, hope, and love, those three things. I don't preach religion. You know, just basically have faith in a religion if you have it, if not in yourself. Hope, always have hope, and love, always have love. Those three things will get you through anything. But at that point, I made my peace with God. Thanked Him for 33 great years, for 6 years with my beautiful wife, Allison. I had a 4-year-old little girl, Bianca, and my wife was 7 months pregnant. And I said, God, thank you for all these things, and thank you for letting me be a cop and an American. And I felt everybody's going to go to heaven that day because these cowards, or terrorists as they want to refer to them as, attacked innocent people that were just trying to make a better life for them and their families. And I closed my eyes and I was going to give up. I wanted to die. And I had a vision of a person walking toward me with a white glowing robe, no face, brown hair. Over one shoulder was a lake with trees around it, you know, over his left shoulder. Over his right shoulder was tallest endless sea of grass, tall grass. It was peaceful. And he was coming toward me. And I had asked God for two things. One of them, to let me see my baby girl be born somehow, some way, because I knew I was going to die. And second, as silly as it sounds, I said, God, when I get to heaven, could I have a glass of water? I was just so thirsty from the concrete. We were caked in concrete. And this vision's coming toward me. And I knew it was Jesus. And what does he have in his hand? And I tell people he can laugh. It was a bottle of water. I don't know if it was Poland Springs or Avion or whatever, but I snapped out of that vision, dream, whatever you want to call it, with a desire to fight to live. Because I realized that if I've given up, I would have gave up on my sergeant because I was closer to the hole where they could hear us if someone was to come by. I would have given up on my family because I didn't fight hard enough to get home. I would have given up on my country, but most of all, I would have given up on myself. And I tell people that at the moment I was about to give up and die, I found some strength, you know, through my faith, hope, and love. And, you know, that's what I want to share with people. 20 years later, I have no problem remembering September 11th, talking about all those we lost. But it's our obligation to teach this new generation and remind people of the good of that day. As crazy as it sounds, there was good in that day. You know, when nobody thought people were going to run into the towers, our team ran in. And then we found ourselves in distress and loss of life. And other people came in. You know, 8 o'clock that night, two Marine reservists and a civilian found us. They called in the NYPD ESU Truck 1. Two officers from that unit, Scott Strauss and Patty McGee, along with a civilian that was a former paramedic. They jumped into a hole and started a 3-hour rescue process that was very, very dangerous. There were talks about cutting my leg off. I kept begging them to cut my leg off so they could get to my sergeant first. And they put their lives on the line. They were told to leave us because there was an encroaching fire. And these men said, no, we'll die with these guys. But they were able to pull me out of the hole. And, you know, I came out. I survived. My sergeant came out the next day as the last man pulled out. We found out a year later that we're the only two to survive from underneath the World Trade Center. And I think it's my job as a survivor to share with people that you can overcome whatever darkness is that you have. I don't care if it's, you know, physical tragedy, you lost a loved one, you know, you have found out you got cancer, you found out you got COVID. It could be just as simple as not being able to pay the bills at the end of the month. So right now, if you're struggling through something, I want you to know that, you know, if I survived 220 stories falling on me, the human spirit is strong. And that's what I want to share 20 years later. I want to inspire people to know that there was good on that day. And there's always good out of tragedy. And that's the problem. If you don't pull the good out of a tragedy, it's just that, a tragedy. And I, for one, refuse to let September 11th just be a tragedy. I look at it as a day that brought the United States together, brought the world together, and showed us that evil will never conquer us.
Absolutely. Will Jimeno joining us here. And, you know, this is one of those things where a lot of guys would jump in, but you know what, man? People need to hear this. And you might ask, aside from, you know, the 20th coming up here, why Will is on. Will is not only a testament to strength and the American, you know, vision, the dream of being an American, he is a hell of an outdoorsman, which we will get to in just a few minutes as well. But we'll hang on the line. We want to talk about your two new books coming up. I can't wait to read them. Sunrise Through the Darkness, Immigrant, American Survivor. He is all three of those things, and you can add author to that as well. Joining us here, it's Will Jimeno on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street, 127 in Mason. Wednesday night is auction night, so make sure you check them out. And, you know, they do a great job. It looks like a very small store from the outside, but you go in, it is everything to everyday carry, to concealed, to sound suppressors, you name it, they have it in stock, and they can help you get in the right direction to find what you want for your shooting needs. Not what they want to sell you, but what you want. Getting back to our guest right now, retired Port Authority Police Officer Will Jimeno, among other things, adding author to your repertoire, if you will. Immigrant American Survivor is your kid's book that is coming out, and you are all three, aside from author and all the other stuff that you've done. But those are the first three in that order.
Yes, you know, I'm blessed to have come from Barranquilla, Colombia. You know, for those that don't know, that's where Shakira and Sofia Vergara are from. came here in 1970 with my parents, like every other immigrant, to seek the American dream. Became an American, served in the U.S. military and the U.S. Navy, 4 years on the USS Tripoli LPH-10, and then ultimately became a survivor with the events of 9/11. And I'll be honest with you, Duran, this book, I'm very, very proud of the feedback we're getting. It's out now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, as well as at the 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York City, which we're very proud of. The book is both in English and Spanish, but what I'm so proud of is that all of this book does is follow my life. It shows you and it teaches children about immigration, how great this country is, why this country is so great. Go through the trials and tribulations of growing up as a child, you know, bullying. I touch that. I touch on your dreams. And something that my mother always told me in Spanish is nunca te rindas. Nunca te rindas, which means never give up. And that's the main message of this book. And it goes on to show you my military service, how I met my wife, pursuing my dream to become a police officer. That took me 6 years. 6 years, because it's very sought after position up here. And then I teach the kids about 9/11, what happened to us as a team, how I survived with my sergeant. But most importantly is that to have patriotism for this country and all our freedoms, and how I was able to overcome it and live a fruitful life. And what I think it's important, again, 20 years later, is to teach children what happened that day, but and teach them the good of that day, and that they can also overcome any tragedy that's going to come toward their way. And we all know, unfortunately, very few of us have a life that you go through without adversity or tragedy. So I want to help the children prepare young. I want to inspire them. I want to motivate them. But I want to make them strong. And the cover of the book will show you my pride as being an immigrant coming from Colombia. You see a young man with a soccer shirt that, you know, because soccer is universal, but it shows the American flag on the cover. It shows the World Trade Center, Twin Towers, and most of all shows the Statue of Liberty. So it's a book that, again, we've gotten great feedback. It wasn't on my radar. I was trying to do my other book, Sunrise Through the Darkness, but over the last several years, people had asked me, can you please do a children's book? And I'm like, I don't know how to do a children's book. But luckily last year I was introduced to Charles Riccardi, my co-author and illustrator, and together we worked on it during COVID, and it's a good book. And, you know, people tell me, Will, your book is so needed at this time where people are divided and people are depressed and there's a lot of anxiety. This brings people together and inspires children. You know, my other book, Sunrise Through the Darkness, is a book that I have been trying to put together for a decade, but I was turned down by publishers. They said, listen, they made a film about you called World Trade Center. We love your story, but, you know, they made a film about you. And I said, but you don't get it. It's not about the day of. It's about the recovery. It's about me having to deal with my darkness, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. So the book actually goes into detail about what happened that day. But I co-authored it with Michael Motes, a good friend of mine, doctor of psychology. And I said, Mike, can we write a book where we tell the story, but then explain to everybody the aftermath? Because that's what people are interested in when I go do speaking engagements. I said, Will, how are you able to live a fruitful life after such a tragedy? And I open up about a lot of dark things, about post-traumatic stress disorder. My wife even has a chapter in this because we don't realize when we're the focus of a darkness, our family, our caregivers around us are also suffering secondary PTSD. So the book is kind of a guide to those that are trying to find their way out. And why I say a guide is because a lot of people don't want us to go and talk to therapists. You know, they're ashamed that they feel like they have a mental issue. And I want people to understand you're not alone. That's the main message of this book. You are not alone. So when you feel that, hey, my problem isn't worthy to be spoken of, it is, because you're important. You're important to this world. You're important to your loved ones. And I really share some very deep things here that I had to struggle with to find my happiness. I share about what was the turning point where I realized that as a man, I had to do what's right from my family, the people I love, and myself. And it's a very heavy book because it really opens up about parts of my life where, you know, I thought about ending my life, to be honest with you, with survivor's guilt and everything else. But, you know, I forged forward. And Sunrise Through the Darkness is also going to be released August 16th, and it'll be available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, University Press, ProfessorsPress.com, as well as everywhere good books are sold. So both books will be available at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And Sunrise Through the Darkness is one, when you look at the cover, if you're someone who's dealing with any type or any form of darkness, whether it's PTSD, drug, alcohol, sexual abuse, child abuse, you know, again, any stresses of life, it's a book that you're going to be able to relate to. And I hope that it helps people because as a survivor, that's still my goal, is to help people. And when I help one person, I feel like I'm wearing a uniform. And I'm proud to say that Sunrise Through the Darkness is forwarded by a U.S. Marine that heard me speak and came back a following year to tell me that he credited me with saving his life, which blew me away and everybody in the audience. So
that's awesome.
Instead of getting someone famous, I got just a regular person. And not really, I shouldn't even say a regular person. This person fought for our country, loves our country, and is still trying to help other people through his darknesses. So together, Immigrant American Survivor, Sunrise Through the Darkness are books that I'm a gift 20 years later to people to help them, inspire them, motivate them, and help them overcome their darknesses.
Well, I know my wife was all giddy about it. And when I showed her the book, she was on the pre-order. Excuse me.
No.
To go ahead and get that. And you know what? In a time where statues are coming down, because that'll make things go away. That will, if you didn't know, you could tear a statue down and history will go away. But I say that with such sarcasm. But you know what? We need to be reminded. When we're shown these images of September 11th, my wife was like, why do we have to show that? I'm like, you know what? They could show it every day for all I care, because that's how we need to be reminded that we, at one time, were collectively one big unit, happy family, because of something. You know, you can infight with your brothers and sisters all you want, but don't let somebody from the outside come in. You know, and that's what we saw.
And, you know, people have to remember history is very important. I stress this to everybody. What influenced me is my love for my country. When I was a kid, I was influenced by watching the war movies, the TV shows on cops, you know, Pearl Harbor, you know, Korea, Vietnam. I saw what the cost of freedom is, and it's important that we teach this generation that freedom is not free. And I tell the children, blood, the flag is not made out of cloth. It's made out of the blood of patriots. And we have to instill that in them, because our freedom is precious. It's something fragile, and it's something that has been fought for, and it can be easily lost. And people got to realize, to regain freedom, you're going to have to shed blood. And I don't want that for people. I want them to know that those that lost their lives so we could be free today, we need to honor them by protecting them our freedom and exercising our freedoms in the right and correct way.
Absolutely. Will Jimeno, as always, man, it's great to talk with you. And I know you've got some deer hunting coming up and some other busy times. And I'll be watching vicariously through you, because you hunt with some great people that we've had here on the show with Cuz and some other great people. But man, we look forward to getting our hands on the books. We look forward to talking to you again. And thank you for all you do, brother. We really appreciate you.
Well, thank you, and thanks to everybody in Michigan, and to all the first responders, all the medical people out there on the front line. We love you. We support you. To my brothers and sisters in blue, remember, you are heroes every single day. Don't ever forget that.
All right. Will Jimeno joining us. A whole another hour of Wild Michigan coming your way in just a little bit. Very happy to be here with our friends at Not Just Guns, also Conquest Sense, United Deer Farmers of Michigan. So much more coming your way. Stick around. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.